Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This show contains strong language, big opinions, and slightly more sexual content than usual, so be aware, folks.
This is a Dave original podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Late Night Mash podcast. Yes, we've got one too, with Jeff Norcott and Olga Koch. In the dawning of a new age, it's a good time to readdress some old habits and weed out the more harmful ones. With that in mind, welcome back. As you probably well know, in this show, we take the biggest culture war battles and play them out in front of your very ears. At the start, Jeff and Olga will be talking about something extremely important, probably.
There is that thing as you age and you know, I've been through several generations of music, and you really do try not to go, this is all shit now, and to be open-minded to it. But I think some bits of music you can go objectively, that was fucking terrible. I mean, that was... There was nothing. I mean, all that kind of, what was that? That emo music at the beginning of the noughties as well. That was
okay.
Bad.
First of all, I am officially signing off and logging off and hanging up if you don't retract your statement immediately. What I will say about emo music.
Tread on an emo landmine.
What I will say about emo music is the thing that strikes me is that it's all 30-year-old men writing lyrics to teenagers and trying to appeal to teenagers, like. I think Gerard Way was 29 when he wrote Teenagers, which is a song by My Chemical Romance. And the song is about, like, nobody gets teenagers. And then Simple Plan wrote I'm Just a Kid and Life is a Nightmare. And I'm pretty sure they were all in their mid-20s singing I'm Just a Kid.
It's a tough one, isn't it, for those bands that eventually do the nostalgia circuit. And they're still having to sing about, no one gets me, so misunderstood.
Shut up, Mom!
And everyone got you. That's what you're meaning there. Like, significant numbers of people got you. And I remember, there was a way that they started. You know, like, there's that weird thing that happens in music where they just they enunciate in a weird way, and that becomes
where
a fashion.
Are you? Right. Yes.
It's exactly what I was thinking of. Who told you to do it? And it, you know, the worst thing is it fucking works as well. It works. What is that? Is it like an anglicized sort of like, I'm sounding like a punk star, like Johnny Rotten?
Might be.
But there's something that the British vocalists do now as well with their consonants as well. Yeah, I mean, Lily Allen and Kate Nash
went on to. I know exactly
to
what
do
talking
this
about.
To a point.
Kate Nash was in the Netflix show Glow. The Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, which I had no idea. She was like a regular on it.
She was great in it. What was weird about that generation was that music was being produced just before the credit crunch. So it was in a weirdly sort of financially benevolent period. It wasn't obvious what the struggles were. There were, of course, the wars in the Middle East. So, but then you get a song like Lily Allen's one where she just sings about, oh, I went to a cafe and I had and they called it al fresco and just, you know, nothing was happening. So all she could talk about was going to the fucking park. Right. Fast forward, you got Dave talking about some deep, deep shit. But they didn't have anything to talk about. Maybe that was the problem.
I think a lot about war soundtracks. And imagine, like, the Vietnam War had, what, like, Doors?
Yeah. Paint it
and
black.
The boys in Iraq had to listen to Green Day. Just something to think about.
That's a... Yeah. Yeah. Well, they did have Rage Against the Machine. Oh, my God. Can I just tell you one thing about...
Baby,
that?
If they signed up to be in the army, they did not rage against any machine.
So this subject is, you know, it's a tricky area in a way. Sorry for... Should we be sorry for stuff? Is it our great-grandparents did... Andy?
I've just written grandparents, but great-grandparents as well. It's sort of previous generation.
Well, it's useful for me if we go grandparents, because my granddad, lovely bloke, fought the Nazis. Really nice, actually, my granddad. Really nice, gentle man. So if I just keep it to just my granddad, no, I'm not. So I will take responsibility because he was a top bloke. And if anything, I'm going to take some of the credit for what he did. But I'm guessing the question has a broader connotation than that.
I'd say, yeah, it's sort of more about previous generations than literally your granddad, yeah.
Mm. But can we keep it on my granddad just a bit? He really was nice. He came back from fighting in the Second World War in North Africa, and he'd fought alongside lots of people of different races, which is a new thing for him. Come back so liberal, man. He was the most liberal guy in South London at the time. He came back a new guy. He was all super chill. Well, I mean, apart from the PTSD. But he drank his way through that. Fair play to him.
So, Jeff, the question is, should we have to say sorry for the stuff our grandparents did?
I mean, one thing I wonder about this is what is the statute of limitations? So is it two generations because it's within living memory, right? Because I was trying to think that obviously there are legacy issues around Britain and the British Empire and stuff like that. But I was sort of thinking, you know, when I was a kid, you know, my granddad had to fight in a war, you know, Germans started blitz bombing London. I don't remember ever feeling like a German youngster then should be sorry to me. So maybe I'm coming at it from an individualist. I think be conscious of it. But like on a direct level, sometimes for a person that sees the world more for individualism, that's a tough leap.
Right. I guess my question, my counter argument to this is, are you living with privileges that are inherited to you because of what your grandparents did? And are other people suffering because of the legacy of previous generations?
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm trying to think is in terms of things my granddad did, or you mean my granddad's generation did?
Yeah.
Right. Because the question is quite, you know, for stuff our grandparents did. I suppose we get into the area then, it's quite pejorative, isn't it? Like, is because those decisions that we're thinking about were made by a very small number of power holders, right?
Yeah, but they were voted for and broadly supported, right?
I guess what we're thinking here is, I suppose my granddad, you know, after the Second World War was the start of the breakup of empire. So maybe, you know, great-grandparents is in some way, a time when those things were more... visible. I don't know how supportive they were is the honest answer. I don't know if he bemoaned the breakup of the British Empire or what had happened.
But I suppose it's less about like our individual grandparents, but it's like, are we meant to take responsibility and right the wrongs of the generations before us?
Okay, so what form would that take then, righting the wrongs?
I suppose reparations is one of them.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, I mean, the trick, that debate is definitely happening at the moment. It's getting louder. It's also happening at a time where, I guess, working class white communities have less wealth, you know, they have for a long time. So that's going to be a tricky one, isn't it, at this exact point in time. I see what you mean, you know, about, yeah, living with the benefits. But it's not, we always go straight to race and empire with things like this. But there are other things too. You know, what about the way that our grandparents' generation treated women? You know, should we be sorry about that? I think that. And then I look back and I think, are we more respectful of women now? I don't know, man. I think that we are in some ways, but not in others. Courting. They used to court, at least. There was something respectful about that. May I have this dance?
I'm okay without being courted if that means I get to vote.
No, I mean... I think...
Is that okay to say?
I think, yeah, yeah. I think that they could vote by that point. But I guess it was still in a generation where it'd be like, they just double check with the husband. I don't know, man, but if you met my nan, I don't think she was double checking with anyone. I think she was probably setting the political tempo of that house. But I just wonder if, I do think in particular of how we relate to women, that whole thing of like, you know, ballroom dances a tea dance, you know, or someone trying to fucking grind on you at a shitty nightclub. I don't know. I wonder if there's some things that aren't as respectful as they were.
I think there's a lot of funny things to be said about being grinded on a nightclub dance floor. And as you're hearing me talk, it's me trying to find that.
No, I was very courtly, you know. I was still, even at a nightclub when they were playing Boom Shake the Room, I'd be like, can I have this dance, please?
What I'm hearing is throughout history is what I'm hearing, what you're saying is, so there used to be, quote unquote, respectful dancing, right? When you're sort of at a distance, sort of bowing to each other, doing very, like holding hands up, at a distance. There's no real close body-to-body contact. But as the wage gap slowly shrank, the people got closer and closer together. And here we are with the wage gap still there, but incrementally smaller than it was hundreds of years ago. And now we are dancing so close together, we are grinding. So I suppose the trade-off is the closer you are on income, the closer you are on the dance floor.
That's beautiful. I mean, like, that. Do you know what you just said there? Sounds like the kind of excuse that a bloke, like, if a bloke could actually think of that excuse in the moment, my God. It was like, oh, what are you doing? Like, get off me. No, the reason I'm doing that is because the pay gap. God, you could, I mean, that is, you could sell that approach. Like, no, because the pay gap is gone and as we become closer together.
Yeah.
So if we both sort of loosely agreed that it's particularly in living memory, but not exclusively, that there are things that we can do that you'll be held accountable for, what are we doing right now, Olga? What are we not doing? I mean, immediately I'm going, my brain's going planet, climate. Is that, will they hunt us in the future? Will there be kangaroo courts? What did you do? Will they be going through our social media?
I think I need to be held accountable for my bad tweets. Some things can be thought, they should not be written down.
I wonder if kids will move beyond that, because they'll live their whole lives in a social media thing, that they'll need to discount social media because every aspect of their life is there. So it'll be in there, it will be useful to them. But you're up for that. If the day comes when they come knocking and you'll have lived, you'll have hoped that you got away with it, 8-year-old Olga, and you say, I always knew this day would come.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. And then be like, in 2016, and I would say, stop. I know exactly what this is about. I'll accept any punishment. And then it's just some of the worst takes.
I would be happy for the period of maybe 2017 to 2020, some of my takes on culture war stuff. I think I was just quite angry generally, more angry than I am now. And yeah, I got wound up about gingerbread men becoming gingerbread women. I did. I really felt like that was a thing that I should write an article about. And I don't know why I felt like that. And I'm willing to come clean and say that, you know, I think that a Brexit and a pandemic and a cost of living crisis and a war later, it doesn't seem like such a big issue, I have to say.
What was the catalyst for you?
What, for the gingerbread thing?
No, what was the thing that made you think, oh, actually, I don't feel that way anymore. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
I just thought there's some culture stuff where I do think, you know, when people talk about, you know, like sex, and like that's a very important debate that's happening about what's in curriculums, you know, and stuff like that. These are formative elements of culture. I just don't think anymore that Pret a Manger trying to sell a few more gingerbreads was something that I need necessarily to concern myself with. And I think the planet, if the way that young people are more radicalized about the planet now is any sign, it'll be like, you know, remember the first Superman film where Zod and the big guy and the woman are there and they get tried. I think that'll be us, like on the planet just before Krypton blows up. And it'll be people that thought they actually, no, I was recycling. They're going, the people that were recycling were the worst. There'll be something that'll be proved that recycling is actually worse than landfill. Stuff that we haven't even accounted for. And then me, you, and Jeremy Clarkson will be in this weird glass thing that gets fired off to the Phantom Zone.
It would be the three of us because we are at the front lines. I'd say every bath I've ever taken, I like baths.
I love a bath. You know, that'll be one. You know, like one of those dictators that goes down fighting. I'll be like, I'm not even sorry. And I'll go right, even just before they shot me between the eyes. I don't regret a thing. Fuck all of you.
Bury me in a bath of my own blood. Throw in a lush bath bomb.
I knew some of those bath bombs were environmentally unsound, but you know what? My skin felt amazing afterwards. Amazing. You'll never know. Bang.
Downs a glass of water full of microplastics.
Microbeads. You know, like, that is a bad thing to be putting into sea. But the other hand, I do want to have amazing skin. It's tough to be a good person.
I would love microbeads to be the hill you die on.
I still think everything's possible, where, like, future scientists go, actually, it turned out the microbeads were being ingested by certain fish and their bodies evolved to turn that into oxygen.
Oh, Jeff.
I just really like microbeads. And I'm an optimist.
The jury is still out.
Restaurants,
they'll be like, do you guys want tap, sparkling, microbeads? You're like, heavy on the microbeads.
Yeah, yeah, it's like bubble tea, but not as shit. Well, I think as a subject, we really took that one on head on, really. I certainly personally didn't shirk any of the difficult issues there. So, and I guess in terms of talking about, you know, difficult things that our grandparents did, I sort of danced around that as well. So go me.
Well done, Jeff. I'm just here to rehash, to say that we should be held accountable for the things that past generations have done, especially if we are, what is it, reaping?
Yeah, we're still reaping.
Yeah, if we're still reaping. There are institutions around the world that have been built on exploiting groups of people that are still exploited to this day, and we need to face that.
What's the next subject here? Okay. Cool. Can we talk about sex, Andy?
Yeah, we can talk about sex.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Kerry Godleyman here. Do you think sex education should be taught in schools? Not by you, but by qualified people.
Before we get really into this, Andy, are we talking about teaching kids sex education at primary school? What's the age range here?
The question as writ is... should we teach sex education to primary school children?
Okay, so primary school goes right from 5 to 11. I mean, this really does come down to... No. Sex education, I'm just trying to think when I first...
Is that a question that people are asking?
Oh, well, I mean, in a way, yeah. I think that there is...
I thought the question was like, should we... widen the scope of sex ed, which I do agree with, because a lot of sex ed is either abstinence only or heterosexual only, which I'm happy to challenge and make wider. But I don't know if I'm going to go on record being like, 5-year-olds don't know enough about sex.
I mean,
Andy, what's the woke opinion?
Well, sex positive, you know, you've got to be... Can I just talk about the phrase sex positive? One thing that young generations do so well now, he's put really cool words on stuff that I think has been around for a while. Like, that's not to be positive about sex, but they can always give it a snappy word, can't they? I'm sex positive. I'm like, what does that mean? That you think like sex isn't bad? What does it mean?
It means you've tested positive for a sexually transmitted disease.
Oh yeah, I'm very sex positive. Well, I have been, but you got to be in the game to get it.
And here is Jeff. Teaching everyone abstinence only.
Yeah, practicing it.
I had abstinence only education at my school. It was pathetic.
Yeah, I don't remember. I remember there was like a bit where girls put condoms on a banana. I don't really remember. I mean, I was sexually active quite early in my teens. So I kind of learned on the job. I mean, I
don't think girls put condoms on a banana. I think boys are putting condoms on the banana. Were girls being taught to put condoms on a banana?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's that slight generational difference between us is that we were sort of going, oh, you know what? That's your responsibility as well. Stick it.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, I think that they might have moved towards that. But sex positive, I mean, it's like, you know, like the word gaslighting is a very popular and buzzy word, but it sort of describes something that we knew before, which is like sort of extreme manipulation.
I mean, ghosting as well, all these slang terms, right?
Yeah, yeah. So they all existed. And sex positive, I'm just trying to think what the previous thing was that you weren't prudish, I guess, or that you didn't. I mean, kink shaming is one that I find. What is that? Like, so if someone's got a strange thing that gets, well, I can't even call it strange, right? Someone's got something that is uncommon that gets them off, that, and you shouldn't mock that because that's kink shaming.
I'm not sure what's uncommon about feet. A lot of people have feet, Jeff.
Feet?
And my appreciation of them is my business.
Okay, so you, all right, I would not, I would say that would be at the milder end of stuff that would get kink shamed. But then again, there's probably got to be a boundary in kink shame. You go, you know what? That is fucking messed up. Speak to someone.
I feel that all the time.
Mm.
I'm like, we can't leave this unexamined. We can't just accept at face value some stuff.
Yeah. If someone says like, you know, look, I, you know, to get off, all I need is for someone to pretend to be my dad, not sexually, but kind of criticize my homework. And he go, okay, that would, then you need to talk to someone about that. That's not, I'm not kink shaming you.
But the problem is the second they start talking about it, they start getting off on it.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, Jeff, I do need to talk to someone about that. Do you want to be that someone?
Can you tell children that we were not taught sex ed from the age of 5 because we're this immature?
Yeah, this is why they didn't teach us. They're a lot more grown up now. They've all watched Friends. They've all watched every episode of Friends on a loop because their parents don't realise some of the bad stuff that's in it. I let my son watch Friends all the time. There's a lot of lesbian fantasizing Friends. I didn't realize that so much. You can see that the writing room was quite male because every opportunity to allude to the idea of Monica, Phoebe and Rachel getting off with each other, they take it. There's no single opportunity that goes begging for that.
Who can blame them?
And who can blame them? It makes, you know, it added something. It's just watching my 6-year-old son. He's like, why are Rachel and Monica doing special cuddling? I'm like, okay, because...
Does your son call sex special cuddling?
No, that was the word I gave to it, that's bad. That I, you know, if he'd have said that...
That is worse than sex.
That's...
If a man invited me over to his home to special cuddle, I would call the authorities.
Also, it has to be said in that way, like, do you want to do a special cuddle? No. No one ever wants to do Jeff's special.
Okay, so Andy, is the argument to start teaching 5-year-olds about sex?
It's not really teaching them like how to put a condom on a banana or anything like that. Mm. The argument is to give them an understanding of the sexual organs, because puberty can come in from like the age of sort of 10, and so that they know what to call things. For example, if they were sexually abused as a kid, I mean, that's sort of a prevention part of it, okay, which is obviously terrifying, but is definitely part of it. And then also just to go like, when they're about 11, being like, this is might happen at some point in the future, maybe if you're considering a sexual relationship, you should talk to one of our advisors over there. He'll tell you more about it in detail.
Oh my god. But like, immediately I'm going, who accredits that person? That is a lot of responsibility. Just go and speak to Phil over there. Phil will chat to you. I mean, fucking hell, what level of CRB do you need to get for Phil? So teen pregnancy was Not so long ago in this country, it was a big problem. You know, the tabloids used to talk about it all the time. Everyone who lived on a council estate had a tale of a girl who was like, you know, 16, 2 different kids by 2 different fathers. Maybe there wasn't enough sex education then. I just don't know if year sixes need to be told.
Well, so around the world, do it very, very differently to the UK.
Don't tell. But is the next sentence going to start with, in Holland?
Yeah, it's that shit. Genuinely, I think the issue at the core of it all is like, it's so repressed in the UK that it's just hush hush and there's so much shame attached to it. So by the time you do have sex ed, it's already too taboo. And so the kids have the shame attached to sex already ingrained. And that means they won't talk to someone if they have an STD or if they're having trouble with sex or have questions about sex, because it's such a forbidden topic. You wouldn't feel comfortable talking to an adult about it. And then obviously Holland, Scandinavia, isn't there a Scandinavian cartoon about a vagina that's like the vagina, or is it the penis?
A penis, yeah. It's like Mr. Penis Man or something. Hang on, let me look it up.
Mr. Penis Man. And so the idea is like not to be ashamed of your own bodies or to ask questions about it. And I do think that's healthy. I think there is a line between teaching kids about sex at five versus having them so repressed that they are they're terrified to ask about their own periods when they're 12 or whatever. Does that make sense? I think I'm making sense.
No, it does. I just thinking like, there's a point where you could just appall young people if you went in too young, right? But you're like, oh, God. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just about their relationship with sex. It's about them encountering that information at the right time. And also definitely not before they found out about Santa.
Oh, boy. The Venn diagram of the reality in which both sex and Santa exist.
We should actually just breed people in isolation just to see what kind of person that creates. Burdened by, I mean, it is difficult because like my son's 6 and a half and like he's nowhere near close enough knowing the circumstance in which he was created. Like, I mean, there's no space in his brain for that. Maybe if you want to put, it depends, like, are you doing it because you want kids to enjoy sex more? Or are you doing it to make sure they don't have unwanted pregnancies? Or are you doing it to put them off it altogether? In which case, just get like the grossest teacher in your school to do it. You know, coffee breath, fag ash, raging alcoholic, just to come.
Why is he working at a school? How did
I was how dare you? I was thinking of a she.
Yeah, the best way to approach abstinence is to get kids to just think sex is lame. The way that people think Facebook is lame now. And it's like, sex. Your parents have sex. That's so lame.
Yeah. You're still doing that. We have other stuff now. I suppose what you don't want as a parent is that shock day where you don't realise the curriculum's changed. You didn't read that letter, that thing you were supposed to do auto sign online. And then your kid comes home while you still think they're innocent and just goes like, What's
a rim job, Mom?
Yeah, what's scissoring? And you're going, fucking hell. Do you know what I mean? I've not built up to this.
Yeah, I think I would like to, I would less like to answer the question, should kids have more comprehensive sex education? But I would rather go point by point through every concept and decide what age is the appropriate age to find out about a thing. So when is the healthy age to find out about pegging, Jeff?
They've got to be a bit drunk for that one, I think. Must be amazing for people with like seriously weird kinks when they just realise that just by coincidence their partner has the same one. Like, you know, like in Teen Wolf. You ever seen Teen Wolf?
I've never seen it. I'm sorry.
Seen the Teen Wolf. So Michael J. Fox, he turns out that, I can't remember why the film had this conceit, but that he becomes a werewolf sometimes and he's very ashamed of it and he's in his bathroom hiding and he's like, Dad.
So I'm sorry, he's a werewolf?
But he's in the bathroom and then his dad knocks on the door. He's like, Dad, you can't see me like this. And his dad opens the door and his dad's a werewolf too. It's a very funny moment in the film. Says a lot about fathers and sons. I don't know why this relates to...
Wait, do you think that's a coincidence or is werewolfdom just hereditary?
I think it is. I think...
See? Wouldn't it be so crazy if you just ran into a person that looks exactly like you? Yeah, it's your dad.
I recommend the film highly, actually. There's a lot in there about, in fact, you know, about teen lust, wanting to be popular, first sexual experiences, being a werewolf.
Relatable. Totally relatable stuff.
Who's very good at basketball.
Oh, my God. Who smoked what in order to write that film?
Well, I know that this will percolate in your mind. You'll be wanting to watch this film.
Being a teenager isn't enough. He's also a werewolf.
That's the elevator pitch, I think, for the
film. That's good stuff. But as you said, I think that it's really difficult to find someone with the same niche kink as you. And I do think it's, if that's one of your priorities, it's like, I don't know. I just think that's crazy because you're starting with not do I find them funny or interesting or attractive or we have the same values. You're starting with do they like this weird thing that I like? What if you disagree on literally everything else, but they're the only person in the world that you found that also likes, I don't know,
towel porn needs to have a tortoise in the room.
Yeah.
During sex. Yeah, no, I think that one of the things when I watch these kind of Louis Theroux style documentaries about these things, I just think that they've given sex way too much importance in their life.
Yeah.
So that would be Mr. Norcott's first. So I'd go
spoken
in right
like a true virgin, Jeff.
Yeah. I mean, that would be the thing with a certain age of boys. That would be their conclusion. Oh, so you're a virgin? No. And then I'd get super defensive. I'd get really defensive, and then I'd become like a young boy. No, I've done it all, mate. I was doing it when I was 14. I've actually retired because I did so much of it. But you know, there's an interesting point there is that I was fairly sexually active around the age of 14 onwards in a relationship with a girl the same age. And I do think that I started a bit young. Do you know what I mean? The novelty, like my career started early. I think that might be why I've hung up my balls, you know, earlier than most.
You really knew about sex before it was cool.
There was really a really funny moment actually that happened on the school bus going back from school. There was these lads that used to cuss me out most days. And then one of the lads nicked my wallet off me. And there were condoms in it because I was, you know, in this relationship. And he was, oh, look, Jeffrey's having sex. And, like, he didn't realise that this was actually, like, a good thing to broadcast about me. And then one of the other lads, well, you're just jealous. He went, shut up, lads. He goes, I could have condoms in my wallet, but I'm still a virgin. And then everyone laughed at him. Because he said it with such confidence. And I think had previously claimed to have not been. So...
That's so funny. But also the idea that you started having sex literally before it was cool.
Yeah, I was into the old stuff, the acoustic stuff. One thing I do think, and now, you know, is that given the exposure of young people to porn, I think that and certainly not for really young kids, but them understanding the difference between porn and reality, that is something that needs to be. So I'm very pro telling boys that most girls aren't really going to do that. Yeah, you know, and not certainly with not that degree of enthusiasm straight off the bat.
We need more realistic porn.
But it'd be long though, wouldn't it? I mean, we're talking like...
But my understanding is that amateur porn is more popular now anyway, with OnlyFans and stuff. The overly produced stuff is losing its allure. Andy just sent over a Guardian article about the animated show about the man with a giant penis. Okay. I think this is a different show from the one that I'm talking about, which means there are multiple European children's show about genitalia. Yeah. But the one that he sent was about it's an animated series about a man with a giant penis, and it's from Denmark. So shout out to Denmark yet again. Do you see it?
Yeah, I can see it now. John Dillermand has an extraordinary penis. So extraordinary, in fact, that he can perform rescue operations, etch murals, hoist a flag, and even steal ice cream from children. Who the fuck wrote this? I thought Teen Wolf was weird. What is that all about? Etch murals.
He has a really extraordinary penis.
That should be your... But no, an extraordinary penis would be, like, you know, a quite a big penis. This is a superpower.
Yeah. It's to teach kids to be comfortable with what they have.
Oh, by having shown...
Because, you know, oh my God, can you imagine? They got together and it's like, you know who thinks... people who think they're freaks? You know boys who have such huge insecurity? The boys with giant penises need to be told that they're normal and okay because they're such an oppressed group.
And even if you did have a giant penis, can yours etch a mural? So you've still got inferiority complexes.
You know what group of people really needs a mascot? A group of people that's been oppressed for too long? It's guys with giant dongs. Hung boys, feel insecure in the schoolyard.
Just before we completely lose track of the original question.
Before? I think we did that about 15 minutes ago.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. But... So what do you think of the idea that, given that the internet is, like, highly accessible to, like, really, really young kids, and there's a high chance that their first interaction with sex is just going to be through porn. Should we be teaching primary school kids about sex because of that?
That, I mean, that is a very good point.
That's a really compelling point, actually.
Yeah. Because instead of, to get ahead of the game, you know, you just got to compete with the environment that you're in. A part of me would say be a good, you know, be a conscientious enough parent that you know what your kid's looking at and where. But you can't count on all other parents being like that.
Yeah, and you're trying to basically go get ahead of the internet. And if all kids have access to the internet, they will find out about sex. So you might as well give them the basics and have control over that.
Could then be like an arms race against the internet, where you end up being this extreme version of a parent that's just trying to you want to be the first one to tell them everything. And so
I think you need to keep up with your kids' curiosity and never shut them down or lie to them, right? So whenever organically the question comes up of where do babies come from, you just don't do the like stork cabbage bullshit and you just always say the truth, but only ever give as much information as they're curious about. I feel like that's a way to organically.
Well, that's what I said to my son. I said, the answer to this is my judgment that you possibly don't want to know it yet. So it can wait. If you really want to know, I can explain it to you. But if you're happy to trust me that it might be better heard at a slightly later date, then just do you trust me? And he said, yeah. I said, thank fuck for that.
Well, someone's on the playground is about to tell him.
But it'd be so abstract. Just go like, man, a peanut, bim. But, you know, it's a lot. You go, what the fuck? Like, at age of 6 and a half, you can't even put that fucking Tetris together, you know?
Sex is Tetris, Jeff.
It is gross. People don't talk about that. Like, I like sex. And, you know, I was in my day.
No, you don't, Jeff. You haven't had sex in years.
No, but, like, if, you know, at the moment, not years, but, like, at the moment, I would enjoy it in the moment. But, my God, it's oppressive, the idea of having to create circumstances in which this is going to happen. I mean, the relief straight afterwards where you go, don't have to do that again for a while. So I think what we've maybe established in this is that a very good point is keeping up with the internet. And that if at such a point where I do need to teach my son, I might need to bring in a professional.
And you don't want your kids getting the information online. And you don't want your kids feeling shame about their giant dicks.
So, I mean, I think we've spoke about some complex social issues. I think the one thing that we've agreed on is that emo music, they spoke weird in the songs.
How dare you?
We'll see you next time on Late Night Master Podcasts. I've gone away from the voice now. I've lost it.
With Olga Koch and Jeff Norcott, produced by Andy Goddard.
He's such a fucking gammon.
And I'm just here crying over my long dong, my long dong.
My multicolored penis.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, please tune in to Late Night Mash, the TV show, on Dave at 10 p.m. Thursdays. You can also stream it for free on UK TV Play if you're young and hip like me, Olga Koch.
I'm not that old. I've streamed stuff.
Documentaries about the war.
So what if it was?
And you know what? Even if you haven't enjoyed the podcast, tune into the show. A hell of a lot more money spent on a TV show.
Yeah, the TV show is not filmed in a seedy hotel room, for instance.
And I wish it were. Each week, our new host, Rachel Paris, is joined by a load of funny correspondents and a special guest, all giving their expert analysis on this week's news and everything else interesting going on in the world of culture, society, and showbiz. Jeff Norcott's on it sometimes. I'm on it. And we're funny, right? Right?
Right. You're great, Olga. We're good together, actually. We could become a powerful double act like Bennifer. We could call ourselves Norcock.
Jeffka? Maybe. Late Night Mash, Thursdays at 10 on Dave and streaming on UK TV Play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Have you ever wondered what it'd be like to nose around a comedian's house, take their stuff and see how much money you can make by selling it?
No, that's a pretty niche thing, to be honest. Bit creepy, really.
But that's the premise of Dave's brand new comedy podcast, Hard Sell, with me, Josh Jones.
And me, Darren Harrier. We're going to travel the country, visiting the homes of different comedians, chatting about their spending habits before grabbing one of their favourite possessions and giving ourselves 1 week to try and sell it for charity. In a competition to see who can raise the most money.
It's a right laugh as we get to meet amazing funny people like Kima Bob, Joel Dommett, Ria Lina, Ivo Graham, Josh Pugh and lots more.
But also sort of like an incredibly stressful cheese dream where we're trying to shift what are essentially stolen goods against the clock. It's bonkers.
Hard Sell with Josh Jones
and Darren Harrier.
Available now wherever you get your podcasts.